questions, real answers, real firefighters.
Well, welcome to Training and Tactics Talk. I'm your host, Douglas Klein, and we have a great show lined up for you. We're actually going to do a little comparison today between NASCAR racing and the pit crews and the fire operation crews that we know and love so well. Joining me on the show today is Chris Nahm, Chief of Training from the Command Institute in Washington, D.C. Also, I have Jeff Pendelski, Deputy Chief of Operations from Downers Grove Fire Department up around Chicago, Illinois. We have a great show lined up, but Training and Tactics Talk, we're working very hard to get good quality concepts and training out to our people in the field, focused on safety, operations, and the ability to do our jobs better, to focus on everyone going home. So Chris, Jeff, welcome on board. It's great to have you back on the show, and I look forward to talking about a concept that a lot of people across the United States watch, you know, on a weekend basis. Everybody kind of likes NASCAR for the most part. They find it kind of thrilling, but I want to take and break down into the concepts a little further of what a pit crew really does and how efficient they are, and compare that to how we should have that same efficiency in the fire service. So, Chris, let's talk a little bit here, and let's talk a little bit about what's going on with yourself and the focus on some training concepts here, being the Chief of Training of the Command Institute.
Well, certainly, Doug, I think you bring up some interesting analogies when you talk about NASCAR and pit crew operations, especially in this day and age of the fire service. I think we're all looking at how to not only identify the level of efficiency, but to be able to maintain it. I think we're looking at some of the issues affecting crew integrity in terms of size, availability on the volunteer sector, and how that ends up translating in terms of our operations on the fire ground. And when we talk about efficiency and either the lack of that or in terms of the manpower issues and our ability to interface with the fire operations, they're big questions, and they certainly affect the whole issue of fire ground safety and survivability.
Well, Jeff, being the Deputy Chief of Operations in the department, I know that definitely the efficiency that has to go with crews. Chris brings up the point of manpower and the amount that we have to get accomplished and the functioning. What about efficiency to you? What are you thinking here?
Well, Doug, I think when we talk about efficiency on the fire ground, I think before we even get to the traditional, what we think of the hands-on training along those lines, I think we have to even go back one step further, and that has to go back to the policies and procedures that are set forth by our department. It is so imperative and important that every member really understands the ins and outs of those policies and procedures, because basically they're not going to be confident doing what they have to do on the fire ground unless they know what's going to be expected of them. And the groundwork for that starts with a good foundation built up with policies and procedures. I know right now in my department, that is something that we're looking at with the departments that are surrounding us, is getting on the same page with our policies and procedures so that everybody on the fire ground knows what is expected, and they can perform their duties with confidence.
Well, that's definitely important, especially when we think about the consistency when we look at operations, especially with the departments that are our career, that have, you know, multiple shifts that need to be functioning the same exact same way. When we break it to larger departments with battalions, making sure that each battalion is functioning off the same sheet of music, when we add mutual aid in, you know, that's important. Where I came up with this concept is I live in the heart of NASCAR country. Being from North Carolina and NASCAR being so prevalent there, I had the opportunity to spend some time with a couple of racing teams and got to engage in some conversation. And I was really amazed at the amount of training that goes into just being a pit crew member. And I began thinking and relating that back to the amount of time that we put into training. And working on accreditation, part of what it focuses on is it looks at some of the ISO components, and we know that company training is based out, you know, with the concept of 20 hours per month. It's based on a 10-day per month work cycle for the career based. But with the maximum points, you get 2 hours of company training a day or per shift. Well, when I was relating to these guys, they're working, you know, Monday through Thursday, a lot of times Monday through Wednesday in the off season. It's almost like an NFL team. These guys are spending 4, 5, 6 hours a day working is nothing more than a pit crew, making that car pulling into the stall, them going over the wall. And that's kind of the sense. When they go over the wall, they execute, the consistency, the proficiency in their skills. They're very focused. They're on task. They get it done. But let's think about this. They change 4 tires, put in 2 large fuel canisters, put a round or two of wedge in. They may take a wedge out. They can pull off a shield off the windshield and have them out in less than 15 seconds. So, Chris, thinking this from a training perspective, you know, what type of efforts are we really doing when it comes into the fire service that meets that repetitious consistency, that focus, you know, that on-task thought process? How can we relate this to what we're doing?
It's interesting that you make mention of that, Doug. I think Jeff hit upon it pretty nicely a moment ago when he talked about looking at it from the SOG and SOP standpoint. Procedures really drive much of what we do from an operational perspective. But then again, everything is dictated by the training and the quality of that training that we're providing. The other facet of that is the consistency that's being provided in terms of the training, the quality, and then again the repetitious of that in terms of how frequently are we training. Now, certainly when we look at the career sector, there's more opportunities on a consistent basis based upon scheduling of our companies, availability, and so forth. However, the gap continues to be present on the volunteer side in terms of the availability of hours, the consistency of training, the repetitiousness of those drills and training activities, and how that relates to the multifunctions of a particular department or company. We have consistencies, at least in terms of company assignments on the career sector, and certainly a lot more variables on the volunteer side. So if we're expecting, let's say, for engine company operations to be a focal point in increasing proficiencies based upon just stretching a line, I need to make sure that I have the highest degree of complement of numbers in terms of the volunteer sector to be showing up for the drills, going through the various types of evolutions with consistency and quality so that everyone gets up to the same operating speed. And that's where the continuing gap is. You take a look at the availability of personnel, the availability of those hours within that sector, and again, it's very difficult to provide an avenue to achieve that level of consistency and quality. So we're constantly looking at maybe meeting some minimal standards of hours in a particular discipline, but we never get past some of the basic fundamentals. So we're constantly focusing in on the fundamental activities but never going beyond them to increase the proficiencies, as you discussed.
You bring up a good point there, and Jeff, I'm going to talk to you a little bit here about this. When we're setting up training, and I know being the operations chief, you have a pretty busy day for your crews when they come in. There's a lot of functions that have to take place. You know, training should be in the forefront. That should be one of the paramount pieces that we're looking at that has to occur. It can't be cut out. How well prepared do you think we're setting up training programs and not wasting the time? And what I say about this is, how prepared are our training people or the people that are conducting the training when we put companies together or when we start the training process? You know, what's the prepared factor for the instructor for that efficiency to make things roll?
Well, Doug, I think the factor that you're actually referring to is, and correct me if I'm wrong here, just so I'm understanding you want to know about how prepared are our instructors to approach this concept now.
Exactly, and one of the things I see coming from a volunteer sector and also being in the career side, I see two different sides. And a lot of times what I'm seeing is when they come in, you know, to a classroom setting, there's a lot of wasted time in the front. There's not preparation. There's not what I call readiness to engage. So let's pick it up from there. And being where you've got to maximize all your time, I know this is important to you on the career side.
Quite honestly, looking at it from that perspective, Doug, when you look at everything that's mandated from the fire service now, you're talking about getting into depth into some of these areas. Basically what happens is from the career side, I'm seeing us touching a basic subject or hitting just the high points of it, and we're moving on to the next subject. And by the next time that we get to that subject again to approach it in training, we're repeating that same material over again. We're not really getting a good opportunity to expand upon it. And a lot of it has to do with everything that is being mandated of all the different areas that we have to cover. Now, from a career perspective, we're able to meet those mandates. I could see this being very difficult from a volunteer department's perspective. You know, there's all these areas that we're getting into now, such as technical rescue, emergency medical services, and there's mandates with them that we have to hit certain points with that have to be hit every year on a continual basis. And then just to get to the meat and potatoes of the fire side, it's very difficult. And it is hard for the instructors to be prepared to go to the next step with that, because by the next time they get to that point where they're meeting with the companies, it's already been 1 year and they have to hit those mandated points again. So it does make it very difficult.
I can see that. Chris, yep. We come from the volunteer ranks here. That's, you know, we have a rich history in that, and I know that from your history in New York and mine from the places I've been. And a lot of times, I know we've talked about this in the past, you show up and everybody's looking at each other going, what are we going to do tonight? How does that play a factor in what we're trying to accomplish?
Well, it gets back into the quality of training. Obviously, as a training officer in the volunteer sector or in a small combination department, the need to plan out and appropriately identify the training needs for that organization well in advance are paramount. I mean, that forms the basis of any type of quality level training program. Without that, then, again, they're just going through the motions of identifying an activity versus training in terms of a quality level and going through the motions to identify some type of a task level activity that they may be just working towards to increase some skill-based knowledge. I mean, I wouldn't call it training from that perspective, but again, that is one of the continuing challenges. I think most organizations have made some marked increases over the years, but again, overall, when you take a look at the fire service on a national level, both rural and suburban organizations, predominantly on the volunteer side, the continuing challenges is to maintain the quality by identifying key individuals who will fulfill the training officer's roles. But it goes back to another fundamental area that I think we started touching upon a few moments ago, and that just deals with the manpower issues. If we have consistency, in other words, if you were to give me a company of personnel that we're going to strictly focus in on an engine company operations or the functional functions of engine duties and responsibilities, over a period of time, you can identify what the fundamental needs are going to be. You can take a look at the intermediate and identify what the advanced level task activities are and start working a plan that is measured and goes over a period of time to achieve that particular goal. And that's in terms of the training information. So subject-wise, we can achieve that over a given period of time. And then through repetition, I can achieve a level of competency that ends up translating back into skill sets. So based on performance. But so with that being said, do I have the availability of those individuals? If I'm on the volunteer side, I've got maybe half a dozen guys that are showing up to the station for a weekly drill or bi-monthly drill. I need to ensure that I get 100% participation. If I only have 50%, then I've already cut my efficiency down to 50% or less based upon who's there and who isn't. So the continuing challenge is availability of our personnel, the quality level and identification and planning of our training programs, and then plugging in the consistency factor, which comes through the resources and the availability of what they have to work with. But there's just so many volatile areas. The analogy back to to the NASCAR element, you're dealing with pit crews that are all consistent. It's a cohesive group that trains, as you mentioned, day in and day out for numerous hours to attain that level of proficiency. And whether you talk about the career side or volunteer side, the fire service many times does not have that consistency, whether it be from a shift personnel standpoint or based upon the compositions of the volunteer sector. You just don't have that continuing element. And then Jeff talked about how you're cycling the training based upon the shift coverages of personnel. You eventually have to rotate back into that sequence, phase that other shift coming back in to pick up on something that you may have covered 4 or 6 or 8 weeks ago based on your cycle. So you're constantly working to get that goal of consistency, but you end up, you just don't have enough time. That's really the bottom line. We just don't have enough time to gain that level of proficiency. But it still is the most critical element when we talk about how that relates back to fire ground operations. If I have proficiency in my companies, whether it be an engine, truck, ladder, rescue company, and so forth, if that can translate back into even a 10% level of efficiency on the fire ground, then I've probably increased my survivability and safety margin tenfold because of what they're going to be doing and how they're doing it. There's just a heightened level of capabilities because of that training.
And that's really important. You hit on something, the consistency of crews. And I know this is the case for us in High Point, that we have people that travel quite frequently to fill voids or vacancies, you know, shuttling people around, you know, to do that. In a volunteer setting, you're not sure who's going to show up. You're not sure who's in town, who's available, who's going to make that call when the tones drop, depending on the time of day. So it does propose some challenges. And part of what we have to do and I think focus in on is that we focus in on what's minimum standards. And we kind of leave it at that. And I'm one of these, I guess, overachievers perhaps, but I think we've got to go beyond status quo. Minimum standards are great, and I think that we've got to have those. There's got to be a baseline. But I truly believe that even from any aspect of the fire service, and let's drop this career volunteer portion, let's just say the fire service has to begin to develop somehow this efficiency that's there. And I agree, it's very difficult when you're in a volunteer setting, you know, to get everybody there, the time that goes into that. Even from a career setting, as Jeff talked about, all the things that have to be done. And I remember, you know, at one point in time going, you know, God forbid we have a call. I'll never get everything accomplished. But, you know, that was part of it. So how do we get to that point? I think that we've got to maximize our efficiency or maximize the time that we have together. And begin pinpointing that. And I think that's a good point for us to come back to after the break here and focus on how do we maximize the time that we do have together and make things happen to get what I'm going to call the Six Sigma business concept views of training. So let's stop and take a break here. You're listening to Training and Tactics Talk on radio at firehouse.com, and we'll be back right after this.
Radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Well, welcome back to Training and Tactics Talk. I'm your host, Douglas Klein. With us on the show today, we're talking about over the wall, the efficiency in training and comparing it to a NASCAR pit crew and how we get to that level of efficiency through our training. On the show with us in the second half is Chris Naum, Chief of Training from the Command Institute, Jeff Pendelski, Deputy Chief of Operations from the Downers Grove Fire Department, and I'm your host, Douglas Klein. So we talked a little bit about all the need for training in the first part of the show and focused on some of the efficiency components in the comparison and how important that is to our operations. So coming back in the second half here, let's talk a little bit about how we develop that and how we get things rolling and keep us on track. So, Chris, let's talk about staying on track and how we do that and making sure we're getting the things that we need and we're maximizing our efficiency with our time and getting the biggest bang for our buck, which is that Six Sigma concept.
Well, Doug, you know, the effectiveness of any training program is built upon having quality identifiable, scheduled drills. I mean, if we have a training program that's truly a program, you need to pre-identify what your needs are, plan those things out appropriately over a given cycle, and that cycle may be on a monthly basis, weekly basis, or certainly quarterly or annual. So whatever an organization's needs may be based upon what they can plan for their organizational structuring, they've got to start with the planning process. In order to take a look at what those needs may be from the planning process, you need to identify what you're going to train on, what the frequency may be, and then do the upfront research so that you end up having a quality level executable drill that, again, has all the right elements in there. If you're just flying by the seat of your pants, as we talked about earlier, and you're planning on executing a drill at the time in which you're convening that training session, then you're prone to failure, and just you're not going to have that level of efficiency built into it.
And we do see that a lot when we show up, you know, no matter what type of department it is, they'll say, okay, what are we doing today? And people look at you and go, well, I don't know. So the preparation is very sometimes minimal, and that is, you know, one of the downturns that we have. So when we talk about making schedules, I know that instructors or training officers that have to do this sometimes sit and scratch their heads, and that's frustrating from the get-go. That's very frustrating. And of course, if you're trying to develop quality and make it relevant to real life, we need more input. You know, Jeff, I know that you've written a bunch of stuff, you know, over the years in articles, being a co-author of the Rapid Intervention Company Operations book from Del Mar. Let's talk a little bit about the materials that exist out there that people can put their hands on very quickly that provide that quality.
Boy, Doug, in today's environment, the resources that are available to utilize for training are just about endless. Let's take a look at line-of-duty death reports from NIOSH. As we know right now, our experience level in the fire service is diminishing over time. The number of working incidents each year is going down, and what that's equating to is firefighters that are less experienced now. And we all know that actually getting your hands on and doing something and having experience is some of the best types of training, even though that training, getting your training that way can be the hardest way to get it, because experience gives you the results to deal with first, as opposed to the opposite that we're trying to accomplish. But what I'm getting at here, Doug, is NIOSH line of duty death reports, we could utilize those for vicarious learning from the mistakes of others, being open-minded, seeing what has happened in that incident, and taking those lessons learned and applying them to our everyday job environment. Some other good resources that are out there, again, you have the secret list, which has given us, again, instances that are happening to firefighters on a daily basis. Again, it's getting that vicarious learning taking place. Going on the internet, you could find so much stuff out there. Firehouse.com has a multitude of downloadable material on it, it alone that could help a training division accomplish their goals. There's everything there from downloadable drill outlines all the way to actual videos of skills being performed. Some other sites that need to be considered out there is the ISFSI website with their downloadable material also. All these things have to be looked at. And again, when we're looking for references for our training that we're doing with our people, we have to go and we have to look for different aspects or viewpoints on how to do it. The one old way that we've been used to doing over time, yes, it may be successful, but we have to take a step back and look at it and really ask ourselves from a training perspective, what can we do to break that or to improve upon it? And let's take it from there. And again, the different viewpoints that are out there, there is more than one way to be successful at something. It's very important in today's environment too, is that if you're not successful at one way, that your people aren't just giving up, that they do have the tools in the toolbox to reach back to and try a different technique if the first choice is not the best one. But again, when we start talking about references, we could sit here all day. It's just unlimited on what's out there, what we have available to us. You know, and we have to also look at some things that are out of the norm for the fire service. You know, how many fire department trained divisions actually look at trade journals, construction magazines, things of that nature. That gives us another perspective and an inside look at what actually that we are dealing with on the fire ground. So again, our imagination is the only thing that's going to limit us when it comes to looking at resources for training material.
Yeah, let's not forget the OE application as far as the National Near Miss Reporting System. We have a tremendous amount of information that's now starting to be compiled into the thousands of categories and line items from operating experience. So it may not be the significant events that lead to a line of duty death, but thus just the day-to-day operations in which we have a near miss or something of nature that went wrong that required a change in direction. And normally that comes about through re-identifying what the gap is and going back through training. So again, the resource of the National Near Miss Reporting System. And again, I think the other thing that we always seem to gravitate back to is the availability of information on the internet. There is just such a volume of information, whether you're talking about the dedicated sites such as firehouse.com or just searching and researching out what's available. The one thing that we sort of skipped upon is looking at the quality level of what you currently have in place. Now, where we're going on a presumption, we were talking about how to reestablish or develop a training program based upon efficiencies and proficiencies and so on. But let's take a look at what a department may currently have in place. So if we're looking at increasing the efficiency of a company, and again, if we're just focusing in on, let's say, engine company operations or truck company operations and so forth, let's just take a look at how effective our training program has been in the past in terms of participation level, in terms of quality. Survey out our personnel and see what their likes or dislikes may have been over the last quarter training drills or the last year's drills. Then take a look back and reflect upon what did we do wrong. It may have been a planning issue. It may have been a quality issue in terms of the instructional delivery, preparation in terms of the quality of the material, or we just didn't have our act together when we executed it in the field on that particular day. So there's a variety of different things that may have an influence, and I think, Doug, you'll talk a little bit more about some of the aspects of gap analysis and so forth. So just going back in terms of quality and research, I would encourage anyone who's involved in the development or planning of a training cycle or training program, whether it be as a part of a committee or as part of a division or bureau at any level, whether it be a small rural organization or a very efficiently operating metropolitan department, the whole key there is preparation, looking at what you've done in the past, how you're executing and developing those currently, and making the necessary improvements based upon where you're currently at in terms of your operational profiling and capabilities.
And you hit on a lot of good stuff there. And sitting across from you, Chris, I actually see on your shirt something that says National Fire Academy. And that's one of the most underused resources in the fire service as a whole. The folks in the Learning Resource Center there are dedicated to being able to pull and send you a lot of the materials. A lot of it is online now. You can go in and pull it from there. And it's, you know, real-time current information, and it has all the way back to the historical stuff. And we could go back and look at Lloyd Lehman's, you know, tiny drops of water type materials that he wrote years ago and begin comparing it. I think part of what we have to do in efficiency as well is do a gap analysis and a needs assessment on the organization and looking at what has our past done for us, where have we been, And where has it brought us to, where we're at currently? And we need to look at where we're at currently versus where we really should be. And I think that's a very difficult piece to do or accomplish for a lot of people, because it's hard to imagine where you really should be sometimes. You get lost in your organization itself because you're so, you know, indwelled in it. You're part of that culture. Sometimes getting somebody from the outside just to say, you really should be at this level and you're not. You know, that brutally honest piece there, or as Harold Schaeberger said, you know, in his presentation this morning, let me be frank with you. And, of course, you know, a lot of times people don't like that frankness, but you have to be a realist and understand that Where you're at and where you should be is a different piece. But we know our heritage, how we got to where we're at. But we need to be focusing on where we're at, but we also need to have that visionary component of where we're going to be tomorrow and next week and a year from now or 10 years from now. So we need to have that pathway set. So in a needs assessment, basically, we need to break that down not only by the organization itself, but we need to break that down to a company level all the way down to an individual level, because a lot of times part of the efficiency may not be two or three or four people off of that crew. The efficiency may be held back by one person, and we need to target that. Or it may be, you know, it's a particular subject. Maybe we're not good with ladders because we haven't done it in a while, and we need to focus in on that. So that becomes the need, or what we identify in that need is the gap from where we're at to where we really should be or where we got to go to.
So the challenge, Doug, is being self-critical. How can you be self-critical when you're looking at your own performance? And that is one of the more significant challenges. We're always afraid to open up and allow someone else to come in to take a look at what we're doing and how we're doing it. We've all been there. I mean, certainly stop and think about the calls that we may have buffed or going on a mutual aid run or going on another box in another neighboring department and standing there watching the operation unfold, where we see the good and the bad. And normally when through the critique process, if we're fortunate enough to be involved in that, some of those types of deficiencies will be identified and we can identify their appropriate corrective actions. But more often than not, we fail to identify them in a realistic, frank manner, and we sometimes we're not able to focus in on what the true problems may be. So having an outside resource, and it may be just the neighboring company officer, training officer coming in from another neighboring jurisdiction to provide that insight, to take a look at what you're doing training-wise, your operational profiles, and identify some of those gaps, and then be able to move forward.
That's important, and people really need to understand this what we call critique, or let's get a little more formal than just a critique. It is a post-incident analysis to really, you know, look at this. Last year at the Southeast Association of Fire Chiefs, there's two gentlemen that came in and did a program, the training chief from Monroe Fire Department, and a lieutenant from the Apex Fire Department, John White and Ray. They came in and they talked about comparing the fire service in how we do the Monday morning armchair quarterback or the post-game analysis from a football perspective, because Ray really liked football. And John took the side of, let's look at the fire service and what can we learn from that. And they get brutally honest. You know, we really look at what went wrong or what didn't go so well or missed assignments or, you know, the efficiency. So I think that our efficiency to get to over the wall like a NASCAR crew and have our stuff down pat to precision, that we can do everything we need to do in the right time periods, is going to be related back to the training aspect and how much time we can spend there, how we actually identify what we need to spend time on, and how we get that accomplished through preparation, through scheduled training, through having the right resources that we can tap into. And a lot of people struggle with this scheduling. And Chris, talk a little bit about scheduling from your perspective. I know you've done a lot in the volunteer service, so talk just a little bit about scheduling for us.
Well, again, scheduling is really going to be dictated by local level conditions. So based upon the organization, based upon its size, organizational structuring, based upon the demands of service, and whether the call volume mandates other related needs, the training hours that you apply for a particular schedule may run the gamut from a one-hour training session upwards of multiple hours based upon the organization. So it's really hard to tell what is really appropriate. But again, it all goes back to identified need based upon the risk and the community profile and what the demands are of what you're going to do. If you have to perform, again, just going back to the basic element of fire suppression with an engine company, we know that there's certain fundamental tasks that need to be carried out. And those tasks have to be trained upon in a certain fashion based upon our standards, based upon local protocols, SOPs, SOGs. So we know what the needs are, trying to develop those into a schedule, you know, at a minimum, I think we can look at traditionally that an hour's time frame based upon a certain task without making it overly complex and overly bearing is normally a good time module to work from and then build from that. But if I have a good solid set of objectives, if I have a good solid training plan that's been identified of what I'm going to expect my crew to work on for that hour's duration, I can get a lot of quality effort out of them and develop some pretty decent skill capabilities over that period of time. Then if I schedule that over the course of a quarter or annual or biannual basis, I can start building upon it. So again, the question goes back to the training officers. Identify what your availability of time is going to be. Build your schedule accordingly based upon how you're currently set up. Or even more importantly, break out of that old conviction of how you've always done things. Take a look at the research. Take a look at what other neighboring organizations are doing well beyond the confines of your own particular region. Because there's a wealth of information out there. And again, I think the biggest opportunities exist in just identifying new ways of doing the same thing that we've always been doing in the past. These are very fundamental. They're very rudimentary. There's certainly things that we have not changed dramatically in the last 10 or 15 or 20 years. I mean, engine operations are pretty much fundamental. Stretching a line off of a back or a side of a hose lay is pretty fundamental. How we do that and what we determine to be the efficiency is really the question at hand. The other thing I want to pose, and I got thinking of as we're talking back and forth here, is that there is no specific standard that we're working against in terms of what is proficiency. And the proficiency is something that is currently being looked upon. Some of our listeners may have become aware of some of the studies that are currently underway, specifically at the Maryland Fire Rescue Institute, some activities both with the NIST along with the U.S. Fire Administration. We're actually looking at some very fundamental activities of what our fire ground operations dictate. In other words, how effective and how efficient is a six-man engine company? How effective and efficient is a five or four or three or two-man company? So if we start looking at having this kind of qualitative and quantitative data coming out in the near future based upon these studies that are currently in place, then we can further along everything that we've talked about. The scheduling piece, the training portion in terms of objectives and quality, the reference and the research, and then filling in that final gap in terms of what is truly an efficient method to go out there. I mean, I know in our particular region of the country, in upstate New York, you know, what is acceptable in terms of flaking out a line on a first new engine to get first water on a particular occupancy. And we also know that based upon occupancies and types, there's going to be a slight variation. And I'm sure, Jeff, there's certain, you know, measures that exist in the Chicagoland area in terms of what is expected for a company to do upon initial arrival based upon just stretching out a first attack line. So quality-wise, it may differ somewhat based upon the organization, but most organizations, whether it be rural, suburban, or metropolitan, work against a certain standard in terms of time and efficiency. It's really not acceptable if we talk about performance measures to be, you know, 10 minutes upon arrival that I'm still working on trying to drop that bed, get that line flaked off after it's been dumped, you know, near the side of the engine and so forth. So some things that we talk about are pretty fundamental. It's just tying in the efficiency parts of them going forward and breaking out of that. Again, what you may have been doing, and it goes back to what you talked about, Doug, doing that gap analysis, seeing what you're doing good, what you're doing bad, and maybe that little piece in between, that the gray areas that you're not quite certain of. Figure out what that gap may be or where you want to become more proficient, and then develop your entire training program around that through much of what we've talked about so far.
Well, from your perspective, Jeff, you're in a whole different realm as compared to what Chris is describing here in the volunteer setting and what I live, you know, in a second life of mine and in the Ruffin Fire Department in, you know, the upper part of the Piedmont of North Carolina. What are you seeing? What's some of your thoughts here on getting this efficiency down from a career department's perspective?
again, it has to come back, Doug, like we've been hitting upon this this whole conversation is repetition. The guys have to practice. When it comes time to go to work, they're going to rely on the instincts that are provided to them through their training. And repetition through actual, realistic, hands-on training is my, and from my perspective, the best way that we could get them to be more efficient.
I can definitely see from some of the thoughts and some of the programs that I've done in the past, our true trainers are our company-level officers, the ones that have the ability in a career department to spend time and are really – that's their role. And understanding the efficiency of over the wall, when the jack man goes over the wall, his role is to lift the vehicle. That's his primary focus. And he may have a subset focus like move the tire out of the way, drop the jack. Well, for a company officer, training and running that crew and developing that crew is critical. And it's not only from a career perspective, but also from a volunteer perspective, because we have those level officers in the fire service as a whole, and that's critical. One of the things about scheduling, people struggle when it comes to schedules, and I know that in the past we did a podcast on developing a training schedule and talking about the importance of meeting your OSHA requirements if you're in OSHA state, trying to maximize your points and the requirements for ISO. There's many of those, and we talked about those requirements in that podcast just a few months ago. Well, we also, you mentioned the EMS requirements of trying to get that accomplished. So it takes a lot to get this done. So part of what we're going to do, and if you're a listener, we're going to try to make this a little easier for you. There are a couple of calendars and a couple of breakout components that are linked to the site here that you can, you know, click on and be able to get a good start. Again, I want folks to realize that there's opportunities out there to maximize what's already somewhat developed. There's good programs that are out there. There's lots of quick drills that you can go to. You know, Chief Goldfeder has put out the stuff from the close calls. That stuff is back up on firehouse.com, I believe, and you can download. There's just tons and tons of quick drills. You know, tapping into the International Society of Fire Service Instructors, their website has a learning management system on the backside of it now for members. The National Fire Academy, you know, getting online and pulling that information. There's just a ton of stuff. You hit it, Jeff. Chris, you nailed it on the head as well. We've got to do it. It's the repetition. It's continuously doing this. It's the amount of time that you can spend on it. It's the focus. And, you know, our illustrious leader, Pete Matthews, is in the room with us. And, you know, at the break, when we took a break, he threw something out. It's you got to get everyone engaged. It's not the guy that stands back and says, oh, I did that 2 years ago. No, everybody has to get engaged. For efficiency to occur, everybody has to perform. And that's something that we see a lot of times is people, you know, let the young guys do this. They need to learn. Well, when was the last time you dusted off your skills? And that's a challenge that we're going to throw out to you as a group is that you need to be involved as well to make that efficiency go to the highest level. Any final comments, Jeff, that you would like to throw in?
Well, Doug, just to sum up a lot of what you're saying here, really, you know, with any aspect of our job, our attitude really is the crayon that does color the world that we do live in the firehouse, that's for sure. And you know, firefighting, it's a serious business and it requires serious people. We can't be complacent. We have to treat every call like it's the real deal, and we have to train that way also. That's what's going to make us successful and efficient at our jobs. Again, you know, the more and more that we practice, the better that we're going to be at it. We have to know and we have to understand what our job function is on that fire ground. And as you said, too, the company officer has to be the coach that, outside of the departmental training program, sees where the deficiencies are with his company, and it is his responsibility to try to do what is necessary to make sure that those deficiencies are overcome on the company level.
Good point. Good point. Chris, final thoughts.
Final thoughts, again, I think go back to the fundamental items. And again, Jeff hit it right on the head. We talk about repeating and going through and developing a level of proficiency. In the absence, I mean, we gain our experience through running calls. In the absence of having that call volume, the only thing that we can do is kick back to training. And through training, in order to gain that level of proficiency, it's the need to constantly repeat until you develop that level of expertise at what you're doing in any one particular task function or operational function. So, you know, it's difficult for anybody, any company, regardless of how they're set up, to constantly be repeating, loading that hose, stretching it out, and repeating that until you can do it with your eyes closed, in your sleep, per se. That's the level of achievement that I think we've all been talking about. A level of proficiency that can be executed in such a fashion that is precise, just like the guy going over the wall and taking those lugs off of that tire and being able to put them back on in the 4 to 5 seconds that might be given. It's the same thing when we talk about all of our operations. And that only comes through the repetition of drills and going through and developing that expertise. So you got to start somewhere, and if we're not focusing in on it, hopefully I think we've given some great insights here on a variety of different levels to our listeners to start thinking and maybe re-examining where they're at, identifying the need, and again conveying to their personnel the need for developing that proficiency comes through the repetition that comes about through quality level training that, again, hopefully the organizations are going to be putting into place.
I definitely couldn't agree with each of you any more, and I like the thing about attitude, Jeff. We've got to have a very positive attitude and a very progressive, thought-minded attitude, in my opinion. And, again, we've got to buckle down and just do it. It's one of those things. It's serious business. It's definitely one of the things that I think we have a gap in, is that we let training sometimes slide for the other components that fall into the fire service. And, you know, that can come back and bite us. And that can come back and bite you whether you're in NASCAR, whether you're in football, baseball, basketball, whatever. It's, you know, we have to be very diligent in our focuses. We have to stay very focused and keep us moving forward. I think it's a great opportunity for our listeners to hear some of the ideas that we have out there, especially when it does come to training and getting schedules done. We do want you to stay safe and train hard. I believe that every day should be a training day, and we're going to provide you some resources to be able to tap into to make that happen. You've been listening to Training and Tactics Talk. I'm Douglas Klein, your host, and we look forward to having you on a show real soon.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these. Or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.